Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
Welcome to the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. You're listening to a new episode of the SciBeat Podcast, where your host, award-winning author and cybercrime journalist, Deb Radcliffe, interviews hackers, coders, intelligence experts, agents, officers, cybersecurity pros, and other interesting harbingers, heroes, and warriors. These conversations are sure to get you thinking. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome. I'm Deb Radcliffe, host of SciBeat. What keeps healthcare CISOs up at night? In this show, Errol Weiss, CSO of the Health ISAC, and Michael Bray, CISO at Vancouver Clinic, will share just that, having joined us today for our show. But before we dive into questions, here's a little bit about each of our guests. Michael Bray is a big fan of my Breaking Backbones Hacker Trilogy. Thank you, Michael. More importantly, he's a wealth of information about business risk and patient privacy, and I've interviewed him for my CSO articles more than once. Vancouver Clinic is growing quickly. It operates out of 18 locations in the Clark County area of Washington State with over 2,200 employees and 400 clinicians. From our previous interviews, it's clear that Michael practices what he preaches around embracing new tech like AI while connecting business leadership with cybersecurity, governance, and risk management. He's a sought-after speaker on such matters and is even up for a speaking award to be announced in April. Errol Weiss created and staffed Health ISAC's Threat Operations Center in Orlando, Florida, which provides almost 900 health organizations around the world with meaningful and actionable threat intelligence. He is also one of four named inventors on the patent for trusted and anonymous information sharing, which I believe is highly appropriate given that's the basically the charter of the ISAC. Errol also started at NSA conducting vulnerability and analysis of classified U.S. government systems, which in my third book is represented as Psy helping the NSA ferret out backdoors installed in Chinese-made or assembled network equipment. It's good to have you both on board for this interview.
It's great to be here, Deb. Thanks.
Great. Okay. So my first two questions are going to be to Errol, actually. The first one's just a trivial question, but I'm wondering, since you volunteer at the McCrary Institute for Cyber and Critical Infrastructure Security, if you know Mark Sachs. He's a good friend of mine. I've had him on my show in the past, and he was a great help on both the power grid attack and the military aspects of my cyber thriller series.
Yeah, I've known Mark for a while. It's hard not to if you're involved with critical infrastructure. I'm sure in your previous interviews, hopefully he got a chance to show off some of his old crypto gear. It's pretty amazing. And if you ever have a chance to hear him talk about it, it's definitely a pretty fascinating conversation.
That's cool. I heard it's worth a lot of money, but he's not going to sell it. And then I'm hoping you can get us updated on what the Health ISAC has been up to lately. It describes itself as a crowdsourced cybersecurity sector threat intel and best practices group for the healthcare sector. In terms of intelligence, what are the biggest, most impactful vulnerabilities being reported? And can you share any examples, of course, with anonymizing it so that you're not, giving away any of your membership?
Yeah, no, sure. We're happy to talk about it. So yeah, it's a pretty neat, powerful network. I mean, with all the members that we've got globally, we've got access to about 10,000 plus security professionals globally. So we get quite a bit of information, as you can imagine. I'll start at the macro level, really. And looking back to the annual threat survey that we just wrapped up at the end of 2023, we had input from hundreds of healthcare, IT, and security professionals, And the top threats that were identified from that survey were, number one was phishing and spear phishing attacks. Number two was ransomware deployments. Number three, data breaches. Four was third party and partner breaches. And five was social engineering. And what I would just say is, you know, just getting even more specific, you know, dealing with the threat level that discussions that we had literally a few days ago, what I would just also warn people about is that the members today are dealing with things like popular, very popular VPN hardware that just has vulnerability after vulnerability. So what's been happening with that? Of course, things like generative AI, you know, we're actually seeing right now deepfakes being used to perpetrate business email compromise fraud. You know, in fact, there was a recent example of this happening in Hong Kong not too long ago with an estimated $25 million loss. So, you know, the bad guys are already taking advantage of AI. A couple more examples. One is this thing that we now have a name for called telephone-oriented attack delivery, or TOAD. I think it might be a new name. I hadn't heard much of it before. But the idea here is that the bad guys are combining good old phone calls and phishing emails. And so the example I would say, and you probably have seen these in your inbox, is you get a very short email with maybe a PDF attachment that looks like an invoice, and it says, "Hey Deb, thanks for renewing your antivirus for $522." And all you see in the invoice is a phone number, and you call that phone number, and then you're directly in touch with the bad guys, and they walk you through some hellacious, fraudulent scam, and they're very good at what they do.
So that means they have access to your phone now and your email system.
Well, usually what they will do is they will talk you through installing a remote access, a legitimate remote access tool like TeamViewer or PC Anywhere, put that on your system, and then you give access to your computer to the bad guys under the pretense of they're going to fix your computer for you.
Okay.
So yeah, all the rest is an action for the reader. It's pretty bad.
Wow.
But HR and job scams are still on the rise, and our institutional members are reporting quite a bit of that. And of course, the last thing I'll just bring up is, you know, we're being really hyper-vigilant about mis and disinformation campaigns, especially here in the U.S. with the looming election happening in November. I would just suspect, you know, we're going to see campaigns like that just ramping up.
Wow. And some of these are segues into either let ransomware in. I know the BEC scams are directly tied to the financial accounts, but mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of these as new ways to get people to click things to open up the network for ransomware.
That's exactly right.
Right. So, Michael, are you also seeing this in the threat landscape that you're sharing with your peers in the industry?
We are. Errol, nice to see you. And Errol, you touched on some great stuff. We are. So it's crazy. It's Wild West. And every time we say it's Wild West, a year or two goes by and we're like, no, that wasn't the Wild West. Now we're in the Wild West. So generative AI scene is just incredible. It's exciting, but it's terrifying at the same time. But we are seeing that. So I would say more targeting. The skill set level that was needed, you know, couple years ago is now out the window. You're basically a superhuman if you're taking advantage of the AI capabilities out there now. So we're seeing that more targeted, more specific. The social engineering is pretty much almost tied into everything now, and layered approach. So we're seeing postal mail, text messages, email, phone calls. So it's like a layered approach to really get that target, their guard down, to think something legitimate. So we're seeing way more of that. The fine tuning of the attacks, both at the end user level. So we're seeing it from our patients level, what they're seeing, impersonations of us or impersonations of people in the supply chain, impersonations of whoever through healthcare, much more calculated in their approach and much more difficult to assess that it's fake. We're also seeing that on our staff internally, impersonations for HR, impersonations for management, impersonations from government entities. That is definitely trending in the wrong direction. So all the breaches that have been occurring with government agencies are able to use that information to impersonate the FBI, impersonate Health and Human Services, impersonate you know, whoever, user groups, committees, we're noticing those trends too. Attend a conference, you're getting impersonations from that conference. We're also seeing a triple extortion, double extortion, triple extortion, where the institution being targeted, the patients are getting targeted, the employees are being targeted during the attack. So sometimes those are what we're seeing trending, and we're trying to avoid those at all costs, is that extra pressure on an organization where they're dealing with a breach, but the threat actors calculated their approach to make sure we're going to target the patient or the customers or the staff at the same time to put that extra pressure on them to pay a ransom or, you know, take actions immediately to that benefit the threat actor.
Well, I haven't heard about the patient data being used immediately to expand the threat. Usually it goes on the dark web and we find out.
Yeah.
It's being abused months later.
So we're seeing things like, we follow OSINT, so we have an OSINT program here, and we follow a Health ISAC and lots of groups out there. And we're seeing things like, sometimes it's $100. Give us $100. Here's a screenshot of your mental health notes. The institution didn't protect your security or didn't practice security practice, whatever they do to try to social engineer. If you pay us now, we'll remove your patient information from this list. It's going to go out in 48 hours.
Which they don't.
They don't. And so there's a lot of that going on that we're noticing trending through the healthcare industry, unfortunately.
Well, Errol,
yeah,
you look like you.
Pretty ugly.
Good. I was going to give the floor to you. Okay, go.
Yeah, I was just going to answer what Michael was saying. I mean, the extortion there, it just really gets so ugly. And again, it just goes to how, immoral the threat actors are that we're dealing with. On the patient extortion piece, we've also seen them stealing before and after photographs of women who are going through reconstructive surgery following breast cancer, for example, and just using those photos as part of their extortion technique as well. And just, stories just go on and on, unfortunately. It's just terrible stuff.
Yeah. And what are they mostly after? Extortion or ransoms or both?
They're after money.
It's all of it. The new one, I don't know how long this turns about. We're calling, it's basically chaos, right? Sometimes they just want to cause chaos, and causing chaos can generate revenue for them sometimes. Or their drivers might be politically motivated. They might be, different motivations for them to cause harm against an organization or the target with the patients as well. We're also seeing the supply chain, Errol mentioned on that. So the BEC attacks, they're terrible. If anybody doesn't know, business immunocompromises. Typically, legacy was finance. It's not really finance anymore. They use them as a conduit because it's a trusted source. Often the organization will trust those email communications. So there's less inspection going on those. So we've had government agencies compromised, Clark, a county, let's say, or a state city department, use that person's email account to then target the real target, which could be the healthcare organization that way. And often, as Errol said, there won't be any malicious content in there. So it gets passed and gets delivered through inspection. And it's just social engineering. Please call me back at this number. There's an issue. There's something about your account. There's your credentials were stolen, whatever it is, and try to get that target outside of the organization's network to social engineer them even further.
Wow. And why do you think healthcare has become such a target, especially for ransomware? It's like Errol said, there is no moral, it's totally amoral. In the olden days, I've been in this reporting stage for a long time. They had some ethics. They had a code. And originally it was leave the hospitals alone. So what has shifted? I think some of it is definitely political. Some of it is trying to weaken our infrastructure. But what in both your minds has been the big shift, and why healthcare?
Well, I'm going to start that out.
Go ahead,
let's take it at the macro level, 100,000 foot, right? Look at, so we got the cyberverse and the physical universe, right? Look at the physical world universe, what's happening. We are seeing that. I've got some law enforcement background. We're seeing that disconnect and ability for humans to harm each other that are cross boundaries in the physical world, right? Yeah. Why did you abuse an elderly couple in a home and kick their door in? And those things were just kind of off limits to sort of, we wanted to believe that. That has just gone out the window lately in society, unfortunately. Cyberverse is 10 times that, 100 times that. We don't know. I can't wait to talk to sociologists down the road, maybe teach, I semi-retire, see how sociologists, psychologists are keeping up with us. But it is trending. So you have the institutional level, state-sponsored, organized crime, all that stuff that it's fair game. They're just doing whatever they want. And then you've got the criminal mentality at the individual level that, hey, if I can, why can't I? They don't have that integrity. Maybe they're not in deep inside in the cyberverse. I'm not hurting somebody that bad. They have insurance. It's not that big a deal, whatever it is. They're not mapping the reality. I would say that young man, I brought this up in a class I was teaching a couple of weeks ago. I think he was with the Pentagon DOD, and he sold data, information, sensitive data. And I think he earned some money, and he's basically a gamer. And, you know, we thought about it. I'm thinking, I bet you if you were to interview that kid ahead of time, young man ahead of time, and said, hey, that data that you're giving to that state sponsored entity is going to be used to help GPS coordinations target and kill men and women that you've worked with, he would have never have done it. So there's that disconnect. It's easy. Healthcare specifically, we are prime targets. We are low hanging fruit. We're very naive as an industry and in general. And it's there to get. And our data is so valuable compared to financial data. Financial data has got a life cycle to it, right? It's a shelf life. We can get your money back. We can print money back. We can get your credit card. We can fix your savings account, fix your checking account. All that's great. Coming in the healthcare sector, for me and some of my colleagues coming over here, it's like, wow, we get things wrong. Somebody can be harmed or die. And so it's a whole different ballgame for us when it comes to that. I think there's a disconnect, and I'll let Errol kind of jump in what he's seeing from Health ISAC.
That's a great start, Michael. I do definitely agree with everything you said. And just to add to that, regarding the code of ethics amongst the bad guys, I think these days I would say it's a myth. Especially, you know, if they try to portray that at all, I really do think it's a myth. I think they do that to try to keep governments and law enforcement off their backs, so to speak, when it comes to enforcing any criminal action against those groups because of where they may have attacked. But I truly think that again, when you look at the sophistication of these threat actor groups and what's happening when it comes to the distribution of the malware and the ransomware, they're a very sophisticated outfit. They have specialists in each category, everywhere from the people who are developing the ransomware and the malware, all the way through to people who are delivering those emails or figuring out how to get the malware on the end systems. And then the people that they hire use to figure out what they have access to now, once the malware is on those systems. And then the next people that will figure out the best way to monetize, how to get money out of the victims whose computers they have malware on, and on and on and on. So they are very good at what they do. And I truly also believe that they will use, from the targeting standpoint, they will use what I call the shotgun approach. They just will take their malware and launch it and scattered as distributed as possible, as many millions of emails that they can get as possible. And then they will figure out what they have access to, and hope that they can monetize that. And the data that we have from Health ISAC, I think, really backs that up, where, like, in 2023, so last year, we tracked over 5,000 different ransomware events globally across all sectors. And only 8% of the ransomware victims were in the healthcare sector. Now, if you read the newspaper every day, you would think that almost 100% of the ransomware victims were in healthcare. And that makes sense, because when it happens to a hospital, I mean, there's a tremendous impact. Patients potentially being diverted, surgeries being canceled and rescheduled, people being impacted. I mean, yeah, it's newsworthy events. And it's another human tragedy that's happening here, and potentially even worse, an impact to patient safety. So it is certainly newsworthy. But again, it's you know, we're only seeing about 8% of those organizations in healthcare. And then just the last point I would make is the why. Why are hospitals so vulnerable? And I think ultimately it just comes down to the fact that a lot of those information security programs are under-resourced, not enough money, not enough people, not enough technology in place to really effectively protect those organizations. And I blame part of that on a 20, looking at the calendar here, 25 plus year history of the movement from manual healthcare records to electronic health records, the rise of HIPAA and privacy regulations in the US, for example, and the real drive for compliance with that, with those privacy regulations, as opposed to security. There is definitely a difference between being compliant and being secure. And I think that the focus was really on the data privacy and compliancy.
Anything you want to add, Michael, before we move on to the next question?
Oh, great points. And, you know, it's all culture, too. Just coming from the financial sectors and some other sectors, the healthcare culture is very naive at the board top down, right? So board awareness, how do you get there? Does a CISO, do they have a CISO? Do they have a program, security program? Do they have a charter? Do they have policies and procedures? Are they all focused on, like Errol said, more of a compliance privacy structure, checking the boxes, and compliance doesn't drive security and security doesn't drive compliance. So there's that, I think would be the biggest thing, is that board awareness and how do you change that culture for an entity that until recently hasn't had that big event happen to them, like financial sectors. When the Twin Towers went down, there was major global financial sectors were impacted when those towers went down. And that forced a lot of disaster recovery, BCP concepts to be in place through legislation. They tried that with HIPAA. They tried that with high tech. I've read those white papers and studies over and over and over again to get caught up. But it's just, it hasn't put the teeth in. And now we're hearing rumbles that through Congress, and they've been impacted, that they're going to do some things like, almost it seems like the focus on sanctions. And we're like, time out. The focus should be on incentives. We don't need to have a citation or a sanction on top of being a criminal, a victim of crime. Right. Remember that. That'd be like going in your home and your home was burglarized, and then the city sends you a ticket because, you know, you didn't secure your house secured enough. And so you got to deal with both. That's kind of how it feels with institutions. With healthcare, we want assistance and collaboration with the government. But man, please lean towards the incentives if this could get out to anybody, and how you can reward us for our good behavior and help us get to where we need to go rather than punish us as a first stick waving around.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. That's happening in a lot of sectors now. The SEC is also, you know, criminalizing CISOs who may not have secured their networks well enough, such as in the SolarWinds case. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. I feel the same way, that CISOs, all security leadership, needs a lot more education, assistance from law enforcement, partnerships with law enforcement. We preached this for years, especially through the ISACs, Errol. And right. I thought we were going in the right direction, but now we've got the CISA, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, really pushing for liability. We've got the SEC. We have the precedent set by the Joe Sullivan case. So there's a lot of things going on that are going the wrong direction, like you said, Michael. And how can we leverage organizations like the ISAC to improve these relationships instead of basing them on, let's beat them with the stick?
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting paged. So, let's make sure we're nothing going on here.
Ransomware.
Yeah, I'm a
huge. Didn't they realize we're doing a podcast?
Jenna Easterly says that I'm a fan of CISA. I love what they're trying to do. We collaborate with them. Health at ISAC too. They're doing wonderful work. It's really nice to see CISA kind of leading that centralized structure with the government collaboration with healthcare. So we're a huge fan, and I think they'll sway. They listen to folks, it feels like, and try to run that narrative so it is incentive based. You know, is there things for critical structure or infrastructure? Like Errol said, some of us don't have large budgets. Some of us do. Some of us are more mature than other folks. Some of us are just starting out. Some of the colleagues that we see, in which we all try to help internally through things like Health ISAC and other users and community groups. But that collaboration with CISA, I would say in the last couple of years, has been outstanding, what they're trying to do. What would be nice to see that is be a funnel for, can we qualify in private industry for any type of incentives or subsidiaries that could help us with our programs? That would be wonderful.
Errol, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would add is, we also work closely with our partners at the Health Sector Coordinating Council. So a lot of the work that we're doing in terms of identifying opportunities to help influence policy or react to some of the policy decisions are being done through that group. And that Sector Coordinating Council has hundreds of institutional members and industry associations, you know, for example, the American Hospital Association, all of which have been, you know, very vocal about, you know, the incentives issue with respect to minimum cyber security standards for health organizations, et cetera, and avoiding the penalty mindset when it comes to that. So try to work it through those organizations as well.
Good. Michael, there's a lot going around right now about what you're speaking on, which is centralized governance for, quote, decentralized IT, starting with creating a cyber profile of your digital assets and online real estate. Can you give us the elevator pitch here and share how this practice may minimize attack surface risk and how to relay it to your board? Because those are some areas we've had discussions about before that I've really admired about your methodology.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep a real super high level. So in the new world, we're in a cyberverse, we have two profile attacks, two things we can target as a hacker or criminal group, right? A human or an organization, that's it. And they both have a cyber profile, whether they understand that. It's very difficult for us as a human to even understand that we have a cyber profile and manage it in our personal lives. You go to a company or an agency, it's even more so. So where I'm going is, they call it traditionally shadow IT. I'm like, no, it's more of understanding, defining your cyber profile as an institution. And then what compensates that? Is there any controls and governance over it? So that's your threat surface, right? If you're not your attack surface, if you're not looking at all these oddball things, how are you really truly assessing your business risks? So for me, it's a long journey. I've been on this for about 3 years now, going up and talking about it. I'm putting some things together with colleagues around the planet. It's difficult. It needs to come top down. So at a high level, it's like online banking, you know, social media accounts, background portals for HR. I mean, all these things are typically legacy. They're shadow outside of the IT realm. But in today's world, you know, you throw a hacker hat on, criminal threat actor hat on, I'm going to go after the weakest things, and you can cause chaos and emotional distress on your target just by going after their 401k administrator on the portal. You know, are they allowed to access that portal outside the network? Oh, I'm at home. I got to do some stuff real quick. You know, there you go. You got a man-in-the-middle attack or something. Now I got access to some major company's web portal access. So trying to go through that. So I would say cyber profile, I'm working through that now. We could share some information out soon. But it's basically defining it, make sure it's defined, it's governed through a committee, right, that you have in place. So it's sponsored and validated and supported. And then that brings down what direction you could do as a CISO or a CIO to be able to say, okay, where are our swim lanes? Are we accountable for social media? Are we accountable for online banking platforms? Are we accountable for other web portals that maybe are outside the visibility of the institution and how we want to handle that? In the event that something happens to them, I can guarantee you that the CIO or CISO is going to be pulled in that office with legal or compliance or your incident response team. And they might go, I have no idea that Johnny B, you know, 14 years ago, set up the Facebook page for the account for the company with only a username and password. There's no event management on there. There's no alerting. There's no inventory. There's no nothing. So that's when I'm talking about cyber profile areas for the organization. It's a big can of worms. There's a lot to this. We're just kind of getting some awareness out that if you're not doing something about it, I know it's hard for our personal life, but the organization, somebody at the board level, executive leadership level should be taking that approach. Use your CISO, use your CIO, use your CTO, whoever you got as a champion and start to figure what that is. It's going to ruffle some feathers. There's going to be things that have been done forever. But I've been seeing this widespread with everybody, almost every colleague I'm talking to around the planet. Some of them will say, no, we got this solid. And then I ask a few pointed questions. We do a couple of things. We crawl around on OS and IT on the open internet. And they're like, okay, yeah, I guess we got some of those similar issues. And these are huge companies. These are huge agencies. It's not just healthcare. So cyber profile for an organization needs to be fine, in my opinion. And it's something I think we're going to try to see. We're going to see that trend of awareness more in 2024 and 2025.
Errol. Advice, where do CISOs in healthcare orgs really need to start? You know, if they haven't been paying attention to this or, you know, burying their heads in the sand, hoping that this crime wave will just miss them. What is your advice?
Yeah, I think as Michael said before, when we have these threat updates, or threat trend stories. They never get better, right? It always gets worse. Yeah, in terms of other advice or resources that people can look at, obviously I'm a big proponent of information sharing, as you mentioned in my bio. Go way back to the beginning of the FS-ISAC, Financial Services ISAC days when that program launched. Since then, and so I've had a long history with the ISAC. But it's not just about helping to protect your company through information sharing. There's just such a personal growth opportunity and a learning opportunity for the individual. I feel like as a participant, when I was in the financial services sector in an ISAC, I learned and grew so much professionally from that experience. So I'm a big proponent of that. So I encourage people to join your ISAC or your ISAO or other information sharing organization. There's some really great resources from the Sector Coordinating Council. I mentioned it earlier. There's the Health Industry Cybersecurity Practices paper that was updated in 2023. It's a really neat paper because it talks about sort of the big threats against the sector, but then there's two volumes in terms of controls that people can use to implement in their own environments. And there's one that's geared towards small and medium-sized businesses, and then one towards large enterprises. So depending on the maturity of your company, hopefully one of those volumes is really helpful in your own organization. And then finally, HHS just released a set of voluntary cybersecurity performance goals. That's sort of fancy words around sort of minimum cybersecurity hygiene that's been talked about for a long time. And those are available on the HHS website as well. And I think those do a good job in terms of setting out sort of the minimum things that people can do as far as examples, I would say, in terms of like patching, backing up, using multi-factor authentication. I mean, there's very basic things like that those documents outline. And it's also tied back to that Health Sector Coordinating Council paper that I mentioned on the controls.
Great. And we'll be including some links to these things in our show notes around the abstract for this show. I know we touched on it just a tiny bit, but what, based on the trending data, do you anticipate to be the top threats of the healthcare industry going through the end of this year? I know that Michael mentioned a little bit, but I'm thinking maybe we could just sort of add any two cents. I'm guessing deep fakes.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to mention the use of generative AI by the threat actors. So we'll see more sophisticated attacks. They'll be harder to detect. They'll be more creative. They'll be in more languages, right? Because one neat thing about AI is I can create a perfectly fluent attack email or even a deep fake of me speaking Spanish, which I try to pretend to do. But very convincing scams using generative AI, for example. But I think the ransomware issue is going to continue to get worse. As long as people are paying ransoms, the ransomware actors will continue to launch those kinds of attacks. And it's not just the cyber sec the hacker, the hacker in the hoodie working out of his basement that we're worried about. We're also talking about sophisticated nation state actors also using cyber criminal means to steal cash. And I can point to the North Koreans, for example, that have been doing this for years, even using ransomware to fuel their coffers so they have cash to spend to buy and further develop nuclear weapons. So it's come full circle.
Yep, I like that. I'll jump in there too, real quick. Supply chain. We're going to see a lot more supply chain incidents. We're already seeing them now, but it's going to trend in the wrong direction, unfortunately. Two of those things is they're easy targets. It's our Achilles heel, right? We all depending on these things. So we're going to see a lot more of that. We're also going to be aware of it more due to the SEC ruling and other regulations that are probably going to follow that you have to have mandatory report. I think it's in 4 days if there's material losses involved for the stakeholders. So you're going to see a lot more of that. We're already seeing it. And then the advancements in the phishing, the Gen AI capabilities, we're already seeing that now. Ransomware, unfortunately, is still trending the wrong way for healthcare. And then I would just say The social engineering, we're already seeing it. It's happened so quickly over the past 10, 11 months due to LLM models, ChatGPT, Bard, now it's called Gemini, capable for assisting the threat actors with those. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And then I would say at a super high level, trending in our own traction for us for healthcare is going to be the difficulties with state-sponsored attacks, as Errol mentioned, with our cybersecurity insurance. We're in negotiations about what does that mean if it's a state-sponsored attack? Are we going to have coverage? And I'm sure Errol's more aware of it too, that we're having regular meetings now with government entities where it used to be about fire, flood, earthquakes, physical burglaries, this and that, areas of for disaster recovery and BCP planning to provide patient care in the community for these things. Now it's all cyber. Almost every single conversation is cyber. And so we'll see more of that. Knock on wood, let's hope we don't have a major attack on our critical infrastructure. But it's an elevated position we are right now across the country, and I don't see that position going down.
Wow, so complicated. So, I used to be accused of hyperbole in the olden days as a journalist in this space in the 90s. And I'm like, look, everybody, things are way worse than I ever predicted. I didn't expect social engineering to be so easily conducted now with deep fakes. Going back to the olden days when social engineering was pretty bad. Remember the I love you virus? Like, why would Ernst and Young send me a note saying I love you? Delete, but now it's so much more sophisticated and so much more targeted. And this leaves healthcare organizations in a lot of hurt. And of course, there's a lot of other things I'm sure that keep you guys up at night. But I really appreciate this high level discussion. And hopefully, this will be helpful to other CISOs in other verticals as well. And I want to thank both of you for your time. We have a couple minutes left if either of you want to add anything in closing remarks.
I'll jump in real quick, Earl. We need more Jedi. So the CISOs, all these folks out there, whether you're in those roles now or aspiring to be in them, hang in there. Darth Vader and the Emperor are scary, right? We're like the rebels. They're winning the battle after battle after battle. We will win the war. It's going to take some time. The attacker always has the advantage. That's the position we're in as defenders. It will switch. Just the fundamental. We all understand the fundamentals of the internet and how fast this digital transformation that our human species is going through right now put us kind of behind the curveball for those folks that want to harm us. They have the advantage, but we will win. Collaborate with your peers. Check out the user groups. Health ISAC is a wonderful group. Digital Director Networks, OnCon, ISMG, ISAC, InfraGuard, ISA. Reach out to them. User groups, fusion centers in your state. So we're starting to spin those up around the country. Check out your fusion centers to get your open source intelligence information for free. NSA just released some information this weekend that they're going to offer free programs to folks that have DoD contracts. So you'd be eligible for a lot of their pen testing, all types of risk assessments. CIS is doing that at no cost right now for critical infrastructure as well. So collaborate and don't lose hope and just try to stay optimistic, right? Optimistic, but realist at the same time.
Errol?
Yeah, and just just to add to what Michael said, fantastic resources that Michael mentioned. And just to reiterate about the whole information sharing bug, I'll call it, just get involved and don't think that you might not necessarily have something to offer. The quick story I tell is when I was at Citibank, which had a giant information security team, I remember getting malware reverse engineering reports from this little tiny bank in upstate New York that I never heard of, thinking like, wow, this is incredible stuff. How is this possible? And so you never know what you have to offer. Everybody can learn from somebody else. And so I would say, take a look at your ISACs, your ISOWs. The National Council of ISACs is a good website to go check which ISACs are available. And then the isow.org website is also another great one to look for other info sharing organizations.
Great. Well, thank you both. And to our audience, thanks for tuning in. This is the third episode of our CISO series. Hope to see you on other shows.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the SciBeat Podcast with Deb Radcliffe, part of the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share this channel and ITSPMagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.